for the team. Welcome, everyone. Good morning. And thank you for your kind messages, those who sent messages regarding my mum's death. And thank you for the flowers, a gift from Norton Summit Baptist Church. Not sure whether this was planned, but tied in a black and white ribbon. How's that? Almost prophetic. So, yeah, that was an extra added touch. So thank you. Mum's funeral, probably Friday, but could be Monday. It's a public holiday on Monday, and it's not easy to get the council workers organised necessarily, because there's another funeral on a Friday, and so it gets complicated with timing. So we'll let you know. Keep you informed. So if you weren't here last week, that's some people, I'm sure, we are doing a series in the Judges, and this particular judge is called Gideon, who was had a very low opinion of himself, didn't think much of himself, but God thought he was a wonderful person who was in fact, a warrior in God's eyes, and would be used by God to bring about a great deliverance for the people of Israel. It's really a story of faith and what it means to trust in the Lord. And as that picture on the screen indicates, a painting from a 16th century battle, faith, Christian faith, involves a fight. 1 Timothy 6:12. Fight the good fight of the faith. And so faith will always involve us in conflict. Inevitably. Can't be avoided. And there are things, some things that are worth fighting for. There really are. And one of those is the Christian faith and all that it means for not just ourselves and our church, but for the world. And so today we find Gideon going into battle. So he's had a battle already. He's had a battle with himself, and he's had a battle within his family. Had to cut down his dad's pole, which was his idol, his worship center, bring his dad back to faith. Now he's prepared to lead Israel by faith in the fight of faith. You know, when you say faith, what you really mean is you're trusting in God. You trust in his name. You know who he is, and you trust in his nature. You know what he's like, and it gives us confidence to trust him. And through life, every moment, we can have increasing trust because we see God keep his promises in our life. That's what we just sang. All his promises are yes and amen. But as we experience that, faith grows. And so we really are seeing a faith growth in Gideon in chapter 7. This is the context. Now, all the Midianites, Amalekites and other eastern peoples joined forces and crossed over the Jordan and camped in the valley of Jezreel. I don't have a map today because we're in the same place. It's the same place as Deborah, just down the road. And what that says to us at the very beginning is, isn't it true in your life that your faith fights and mine are often over the same issues time after time? You know, we think we've won. Oh, got that sorted, Lord. And then we have to deal with it again. Could be our personality. Oh, I've overcome that anger issue. And then suddenly, there it is again. Or that disappointment experience which seems to plague us. We think we've moved on, and then we realize that we haven't. So faith grows, and often faith grows as we keep dealing with similar issues in our life. Could be different people, could be different places, but the same issues. Well, this is what God had already told Israel. I like how when you read the Old Testament, you discover that the things we read in the stories of the judges and the kings, God's already told them about, so there are no surprises, or there shouldn't be. When you go to war against your enemies and you see horses and chariots, oh, and camels, we'll just bracket camels, and an army greater than yours, don't be afraid of them. Because the Lord your God, who brought you up out of Egypt, will be with you. First point, do you notice what's controlling this story? The Exodus. The Exodus story is the biggest story in the history of Israel. That's the paradigm for everything else they should think about and do. Don't be faint-hearted or afraid. Don't panic or be terrified by them. I used to teach a boy in school called Matthew Panic. And he was a nervous kind of chap. And I used to say to him, don't panic, Matthew, panic. Don't panic. For the Lord your God is the one who goes with you to fight for you against your enemies to give you victory. Victory. Now let me ask you, how does that word sit with you? You're going, oh yeah, Dan, victory. Oh yeah, heaven, one day. No, I'm talking about today. Just as God was talking about today. You know, there are some people who say, oh, victory, that's kind of, you know, super spiritual language. You know, my life, it's kind of more ups and downs, and, you know, valleys and troughs. And it is. But you can have victory even in the valleys, as well as on the mountains. I wonder, have you ever come to a place in a certain point or experience where you've discovered, oh yes, it's no longer about trying, it's about triumph. My sisters used to play for a netball team called the Triads. Tryhards. They weren't very successful, but they enjoyed the game. Try a hard or triumph? That's really the question that we're being asked about today. So Gideon and all the people who were with him got up and they got ready, as you do, for war. And the camp of Midian was on the north side of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. We've got the details. We know where we are. But here's the surprise. Gideon, your army's too big. Now, we learn in Judges 8 that the Midianite army was 135,000 men. And Gideon's army was 32,000 men. Gideon, you've got too many men. Gideon, we need to downsize. Don't downsize your expectations of me. Downsize your expectations of you. That's a problem, isn't it, for us? Because the whole culture we live in is, oh, your great expectations, what you should think about yourself and what you should be and become. And God says, well, actually, how about you increase your expectations of me and decrease your expectations of your own abilities? Remember those words in John's Gospel? Was it John who said, he must increase, that's Jesus, I must decrease. So the people who are with you are too many to give Midian into their hands. Why? Because Israel would say to themselves, my own power has delivered me. They would think, we did this, we won this. And God, as we know in the Bible, does not give his glory to anybody else but God. So come to the people and say, whoever's afraid, Whoever's trembling, go home. Go home. So 22,000 men go home. And only 10,000 remain. What do you think about God downsizing? I mean, old people downsize, don't they? You know, downsize the home because the kids have gone. And what about when God downsizes? Hey, what about Australian Christianity in the 21st century? Seems like churches have been downsized. Might not be a bad thing if God is upsized. Hey, maybe we were just too good at saying, we did this. My power has delivered me. We built the church. Wasn't it great? And God says, well, maybe. How about we downsize? This is the Gideon experience. I wonder, has that ever been your experience? You know, it could come through some sort of weakness or sickness. You know, you just realized, you discover, hey, I'm helpless. Not hopeless, helpless. I can't do what I hoped to do. I'm not who I wanted to be. I'm not even where I wanted to be, perhaps. And in those crises, we are learning to trust in God. As I had to do more than three decades ago. So I thought I'd let you on a little story about myself. This is a little tract. I had to very carefully prize it out of my big Bible, which I've had for 40 years, which is stuck, or was stuck, inside the front cover. You see, I went through a time in my life where I was quite sick, needed a bit of respite, decades ago. And I thought to myself, well, this can't be good. And then one morning, I got up and walked into my mother's kitchen. And there, behind the biscuit tin, which is still there, I reached behind. Who reaches behind biscuit tin? You reach into a biscuit. I went behind the biscuit tin, and I pulled out this tract, and it said, "This thing is from me." Whoa. And then I read these words, "My child," which is inside this tract, "I have a message for you today. Let me whisper it in your ear. This thing is from me. Are you in difficult circumstances, surrounded by people who don't understand you? This thing is from me. You asked to be humbled, and I have put you in the very school where that lesson is taught. Are you in financial difficulties? This thing is from me. You can draw from my limitless supplies and rely on my promises. Are you passing through a night of sorrow? This thing is from me. I am a man of sorrows, and I am acquainted with grief. I have let your earthly comforts fail you, that by turning to me, I'll be your eternal consolation. Have your plans been upset? Are you bowed down and weary? This thing is from me. You made your plans. You asked me to bless them. But I would have you let me make your plans. Have you longed to do some great work, like go to Indonesia, and instead been laid aside on a bed of weakness? This thing is from me. I could not get your attention in those busy days. And I want you to learn to sing. I am not eager, bold, or strong. All that is past. I am ready not to do. At last. At last. Because I have a theory that we, the church in the West, have been sold a lie. That we need to be strong. And we need to be big. And we need to have 3 degrees. And it's just not true. You see, the issue for Gideon is not how weak he is or how young he is. It's how wise God is. How strong God is. I have a friend who's posting on Facebook huge amounts about leadership. And you know, actually in the Bible, you don't read too much about leadership theory. Although you do read words like the least will be the greatest. It's the humblest, the meekest who will have regard with God. Changes your whole thinking about yourself and your church and your ministries. And so this is the lesson that I had to learn. And there it is. So when I go home today, I'm going to reattach it to my big Bible. And I often read this to remind myself. I wonder, do you have a reminder in your life of where God was putting you, placing you, difficult time, challenging time, and you thought, yep, now he's got my attention. Or I've got his attention. So, the people are still too many, Gideon. 22,000 sounds good. How about we reduce it to 300? So the ratio now will be 450-1. Now, if you're going to play footy, you're going to lose. If you're going to go into a normal war, you're losing. Overwhelming odds. And by the way, what was the test? To see how or who the people drank water. Some got down on their knees and some lapped the water with their tongue as a dog. Now, you know, there's all sorts of things that commentators say. Some people say, oh, the guys on the knees, well, they wouldn't be ready for battle, would they? They'd have to sort of get up and look around. But the guys who are lapping like a dog, you know how dogs, you know, they've got the eyes looking around, still aware. They must be the right soldiers. I'm not so sure. I think God just chose the lappers. And he chose 300 of them, and all the others go home. And Gideon's thinking, this will be a disaster. Or is he? No, he obeys the Lord. He goes down to the enemy camp. He takes a friend with him and he sees the vast army that they're facing, including the camels. But notice, don't miss it, as numerous as the sand on the seashore. That's very important because they are the words of the promise of God to Abraham. See, the question in this battle is, can anything stop God from doing his work? Could anything get in the way of his promise, the promise to Abraham? You know, could a million camels stop the work of God? Could a million men stop the work of God? And the answer is no. Nothing can stop God's purposes. But all he wants us to do is get into alignment with those purposes. Participate in those purposes. So Gideon goes down, and just as he arrives, hiding in the bushes, he hears a conversation about some Midianites, one of whom had a dream. Do you dream? Do you have those crazy dreams that you can never work out? what they mean? Well, this is the dream of a barley bread tumbling down and striking the tents and knocking them over. And it's the Midianites who work out what the dream means. Oh, this must mean that Gideon's coming with his sword. God's given us to Gideon and our whole camp. This is it. We're finished. Isn't it amazing? So God is able to speak into the lives of other people, all unknown to us, to bring about his plans. So Gideon hears the dream. He worships God. Thank you, Lord. He goes back. He gathers the army together. That's the 300, of course, and divides them into groups. And they have a sword and they have a pitcher with a torch inside, a flaming torch. And they're going to go down and blow the trumpets and rush the group as you do. And as they do, and as they blow, and as the pitchers are smashed and the lamp burns, a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. The battle begins. The Midianites disperse. They flee, and killing themselves actually with their own swords. And they capture two leaders. Always need to capture the leaders. So they, you know, they can't regroup. But look where they captured them. And kill them at the rock of Oreb, at the wine press of Zeb. Where were they killed? At the place where Gideon was hiding, where Gideon thought he was a failure. So this is a lesson for us, isn't it? Where are you weakest? You know where you're weakest. Where are you most frightened? You know where that is. You face it. You name it. You worship God. And you put to death those fears and failings by faith in Jesus. You don't have to remain as you are. You say, oh no, I'm the one with the bad temper. You don't have to be that person. You don't have to stay that person. Argue for your limitations and they will always be yours. They'll always be yours. But put it to death at the place, in the spot. You might even have to drive somewhere. You know, maybe you know where that happened and it made you feel terrible. Go there. Say, Lord, no more. Not trying. Triumph. This is a wonderful story. Remember that verse, 7:25. And then turn to Hebrews 7:25. And you hear that Jesus